Hi everyone, welcome to the Grown Up Girls podcast. So on today's episode, we have the lovely Miranda. Miranda is a relationship and sex therapist, and I'm so excited to have her on the podcast today. Hi Miranda, how are you?
I'm good, Molly. How are you doing?
Good. Yes, I'm good. Thank you. Thank you so much for coming on. I was just actually saying to Miranda, I'm so excited to have her on because I've listened to a previous podcast episode of another podcast that I love, The Diary of a CEO by Stephen Bartlett. And he had a conversation with a sex therapist, and it was one of the most interesting podcast episodes I've listened to because it's so open and honest. So I really hope that this podcast episode is open and honest too. So yeah, Miranda, you're a sex and relationship therapist. How did you get into that?
That's kind of a good question. I just remember I was walking along the street once and somebody pointed at somebody's house and said, oh, a sex therapist lives there. I was kind of like, oh, what do they do then? So I went away and kind of like Googled it and thought, oh, wow, that's really interesting. And, you know, I'm, you know, very interested in relationships, very interested in sort of the sexual side of things and how people, a lot of people, you know, don't have the sex lives that they would like. And I was, you know, be quite liberated and open person kind of in that sense. So it was quite, you know, really something that kind of struck a chord with me. And I thought, God, that's so interesting. So just, you know, spent the next few years studying so that I could become one.
Yeah, no, that's so interesting. I feel like it's something that everyone would almost love to have, like a little bit of a, you know, kind of a go at of doing it, because I think everyone's interested in relationships also, because it's kind of the human nature to be nosy, isn't it, as well, and kind of hear what everyone else is up to. And yeah, and I think you're right, a lot of people don't have the sex lives they want, so this is why hopefully it'll be a good podcast. We can give people some tips and things like that. So one thing I did really want to go through was, obviously we've been in a pandemic, the biggest thing that has happened is we're not allowed to touch. And obviously for those of you that aren't in relationships, that must have been a really, really difficult year to, you know, get through without any kind of sexual touch at all. I guess obviously some people have, but a lot of people haven't. How have you had, because obviously I'm guessing you do like a lot of one-to-ones with clients, things like that. Mm-hmm. Have you had a lot of single people that have, or like friends or family that have said to you they're really struggling?
Yeah, definitely. I think it ranges, obviously, in terms of my work. You know, I see quite a lot of people with a variety of different sort of issues. But certainly for people that have, you know, not been in relationships, or even actually for those that have some, you know, within those lockdowns, some people have obviously been in long distance relationships. So they've equally had quite a lot of difficulty. So I think it's really been quite a challenge for a lot of people. And I think, you know, one of the issues now as we're kind of coming out of the lockdown is people's confidence. You know, it's the confidence to go out and date again, it's the confidence to have that sort of sexual intimacy. So that's definitely something I see that's been sort of quite impacted. And for those in long distance relationships or those that have been dating, you know, some people have tried to continue dating throughout, but you know, they've been doing it sort of online, they've been using Zoom and FaceTime, WhatsApp, that kind of thing, or sort of socially distanced walks around parks and things like that. So I think, you know, but even for those that have, it's like actually now they're venturing back out into something that is different again. And I suppose it's just that thing when we haven't done something for quite some time, it's really natural to sort of lose our confidence a little bit on it, or to feel a little bit more nervous in terms of doing it again. So I think it's something that's, it's kind of quite common that you do hear sort of quite often now.
Yeah. Is there anything that you would say to people that have struggled, you know, or are struggling with their confidence and going back out into the dating scene and, you know, having more casual sex again, more than what they used to? Is there anything you'd say to them as like a little tip to try and get their confidence up? Or is it just, you just have to go for it again?
No, I think there's things that people can do to kind of help boost their confidence. So I think, you know, first of all, it's kind of remembering that others are in the same boat as you. It's not just you that's been locked up for the last year. It's lots of people. It's everyone. We've all been kind of there. So, you know, it's just recognizing that actually in one way or another, everybody's life's been impacted over the last year. So kind of just reminding yourself of that can kind of be that first step to speak, basically send yourself, it's okay, I'm normal, you know, everybody else is in the same boat. So, you know, saying that to yourself, I think, you know, having somebody perhaps like a friend or a family member that you kind of trust the opinion of, you know, perhaps having a chat with them and saying, you know, what is it you think's great about me? You know, if you were to kind of, you know, tell me what you think of my sort of, you know, best attributes or anything that's going to help with building confidence. It's great, obviously, to do it in terms of something to kind of talk yourself through as well, because, you know, we don't want everything to be sort of external validation. But, you know, so if we can do it, but I definitely say it's worth doing that, because that can help just give a little bit of a boost. You know, and there might be things that perhaps you've taken for granted in yourself, that's, you know, just hearing that from somebody else can kind of perhaps just offer you a little bit more, a little bit more of a boost, give you a bit more confidence in terms of sort of going out there. So I'd say doing something like that. I would be saying really to kind of think about, actually, what do you want to get from dating? You know, what are the kind of people you want to be dating? Who do you want to be meeting? What do you want to be doing? So that you've kind of taken the lens off yourself, in the sense that rather than worrying about what other people are thinking about you, starting to think about, actually, what do I want?
Like, yes, definitely.
You know, this is an opportunity for me to be thinking, actually, who do I want to date? Where do I want to go? You know, what is it I'm looking for? Am I looking for just some casual dating, or, you know, just getting to know some new people? Am I looking for something a little bit more serious? So just trying to sort of, you know, take yourself out of the spotlight, because I think that's what really affects people's confidence, when they start to think, what are they going to think about me? You know, what are they going to think? You know, in terms of me as a person, are they going to like me? Are they going to be attracted to me? What are they going to think when we start to have sexual intimacy? You know, to really kind of go away from that and start to say, actually, what do I want? Mm-hmm. And I say the same thing in terms of sexual intimacy. I think something's really important, whether people are in relationships or not, is that they're going into sexual intimacy for their own pleasure. They're doing it because they really want to do it, and doing what they want to because they're enjoying doing it. And I think, again, if we can create that shift, so they're not kind of thinking, oh, well, I wonder what the other person's wanting. Mm-hmm. I mean, that naturally comes into it for people. But I think when people get really nervous, it's because they've sort of almost started to sort of really put the spotlight on themselves in that way. So I think that's just really kind of important. And then, like, you know, if needs be, simple lifestyle changes that might help, you know, again, to build somebody's confidence. So, you know, if somebody's feeling like they've not been getting out and about much, you know, just starting to do that, whether that's on their own or with friends, just generally sort of, you know, just feeling they're a little bit more out there, or, you know, if it's that they feel like they haven't been exercising and they'd want to exercise, if that's going to give you a confidence boost, why not do it?
Exercise is Sorry. Really underrated, especially with confidence, isn't it? And it doesn't even come always through like an aesthetic point of view. It's a mental health point of view, isn't it? And just getting yourself moving again will definitely help you feel better in lots of ways. But also, you know, this is a bit, you know, but in the bedroom as well, if you're moving outside the bedroom, you're probably going to feel a little bit better when you get back in there too. So
yeah, definitely. So I do think that you know, there are quite a lot of things that people can do, and really give yourself, you know, positive affirmation, positive vibes and affirmation, really, I think is just really important. It's just sort of reminding yourself that actually you are great. There's going to be things that you're good at. There's going to be, you know, some great characteristics about yourself. And it's really just, you know, giving yourself that sort of validation.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, that's definitely for the people that have been single through this, which I do really feel for people, because I think having that kind of companionship throughout this has been, for me, a really important thing. So but when talking about then flipping it on its head and talking about people that are been in relationships for this last year, I'm going to be honest here. The first, I'm married. I've recently got married, but I've been with my partner for 8 years. The first lockdown, we can keep our hands off each other. It was like the best thing since sliced bread, because, you know, we were here at home all the time together, and it was great, and it was good fun, and the weather was good, and it was like an extended holiday. And then it got to the winter lockdown, and I've spoken about this in a YouTube video before, and I don't know, and I know a lot of people have been through this too. the sex life definitely dipped. Have you found that it's been quite a, you know, has that been quite a thing that you've heard a lot of?
Definitely. I hear that on every level, whether it's in the therapy room to, you know, family, friends, just in peer groups. Yeah, definitely. There's something about the winter, I think, coming in that really kind of did change it. And it was for the second time, wasn't it? So I think the novelty had perhaps worn off from the first time. You know, so I do think that second lockdown certainly impacted a lot of people in terms of sexuality. And I think it's really important for people to recognise that actually, you know, if so many people are saying this, we can assume that that's normal. You know, yeah. We can say, you know, there is no one specific way of things of being, but this is something that definitely has been talked about a lot. And I think has come up for a lot of people in their relationships, you know, and you know, we're coming, obviously it's May now, you know, coming out of the second lockdown. So, you know, what's actually nice then is it gives us that opportunity to really sort of rekindle desire and spice things up a bit and recreate, you know, something nice sort of for the year ahead. So that is, you know, one of the things about, if you think about where we are now, we don't need to worry too much about what's happened. Let's think about where we are going ahead. So definitely there's lots of things that couples can do. So I definitely say, you know, one of the first things is we want to sort of start to really try and mix things up again. You know, people have been sort of cooped up, perhaps working together, you know, living together, working together, for those that have got children, you know, doing everything in that one sort of space and having very little contact with others. And the nice thing is obviously when we can start to see others again, we've got something to talk about. There's something different going on. So that's one element. I think really to try and make time to consciously say, okay, we need to have a little bit of time where we do our different interests again, you know, where we have our different hobbies or spend time with friends, just to really sort of mix things up. And I think where people, for those that don't have so much of that going on, you know, they can mix things up just simply by saying, look, you know, that, and I should say, I suppose some people are obviously still working together at home because not everyone's going back to the office yet. So, you know, one can go out for a walk and kind of, you know, the other can go kind of go and meet them, or they could be working in different rooms in the house. You could be mixing that up a bit, so you're not always working in the same space. You know, so where I was going, sorry, with the, you know, if you went for a walk, you could kind of almost have a bit of a sort of an anticipation in terms of meeting up with somebody. So it could be your partner, but just to kind of like mix it up a little bit, so you're not just kind of every day same space. And obviously restaurants and things opening now, you mix it up, do something a little bit different, create it like a date. You don't need to leave the house together, do you? So it could be that one has gone out ahead, or perhaps has been to work, the other kind of gets ready at home. So when you do meet up, when you turn up at that restaurant, you know, you're seeing the person perhaps fresh, you know, haven't seen them for the last few hours, you don't know what they're going to be wearing, create a little bit of anticipation and excitement about seeing them. So it can kind of create it a little bit more as a date, which can be quite fun. And, you know, yeah, just consciously then saying to each other, like with this idea of mixing things up, that we're not going to talk about sort of the mundane stuff. We're not going to talk about, you know, the what's going on in the house, the stuff that we know, you know, we can be talking about the future. We can be talking about the things we'd like to be doing, the adventures we want to be having, you know, the holidays we want to go on, the sort of career aspirations we might have. So really trying to think back to this idea of dating and sort of injecting a bit of that fun, that lightness and playfulness into it.
I really, really love that idea. And that's something I've never thought about. But even when you were just saying it, the thought of like meeting at the venue, like, and just not, you know, him not seeing me running around the house stressed because I don't know what I'm going to wear. Like, even that just adds such another layer of, I don't know, like, just a bit, it's a bit more special, isn't it, than leaving the house together and then, you know, arguing about who's parking and all that kind of thing. It's just like, no, you're meeting up. It is like a bit more of an official date. So I really like that. That's a really nice idea. It kind of brings me onto one of my questions, actually, of what you did say about making time for each other. Somebody has asked about scheduling sex and whether or not, if your sex life is slightly, you know, if it's not as good as you want it to be, is it a good idea to schedule sex or not, or is it totally unique to the couple?
I think it's something that can be unique to the couple in terms of what they like, or, you know, not everybody likes the same thing. Sometimes I talk about scheduling sex and people say, no, not ever. And for others, they're open to the idea. For some people, they much prefer scheduled sex and they don't like the idea of spontaneous sex. So I think it does come down to the individual couple. But at the same time, I would encourage people just to think a little differently around it and think about, you know, if we've been doing something that has become very samey and we've started to get bored, or we've started to sort of feel that we haven't got the same desire to do it, then that is a time to sort of really review it and think, actually, what can we do a little bit differently here? In terms of that scheduled sex, really, if you think about it, when people are dating, they kind of do that, maybe not quite so explicitly, but if, for example, you're dating, you see somebody once a week on a Friday, for example, then, you know, having the date, going out to dinner or going to a bar or doing something, and then kind of knowing in themselves that they're going to be having sexual intimacy afterwards. So they might sort of, you know, be prepped for it, you know, wearing the underwear they want to be wearing, and they've kind of got that anticipation of it. They're looking forward to it. And there can be something really fun and exciting about that. So, you know, we can think about putting that into the couple's relationship. We don't need to be saying, when I talk about scheduled sex, I'm not saying, hey, can you, you know, be in the bedroom 9 o'clock on a Thursday, you know, be ready there naked. I'm not suggesting that at all. Unless that's what floats your boat, that's fine. What I'm saying about it is it's about kind of saying, do you know what, on this day, let's create some time where we can do something together. And it might lead into the sexual intimacy. And it might be that you allocate to say, right, let's have sexual intimacy, but let's make it exciting. Let's make it interesting. You know, so it might be that you say, look, what kind of thing do you want to be doing? You know, do you want to be in the bedroom? Do you want to be doing something different? You can build up to it. You can be flirting during the week, you know, messaging, for example, or, you know, sending photographs, or, you know, just building up to it and thinking about what that might look like, much the same as you would have if you were dating. So it can actually be extremely sexy and, you know, something that you really start to anticipate. So I do think, we've got to get past this idea of scheduled sex being as a kind of something that's dull and boring. Definitely doesn't have to. It can be really exciting.
No, good. Definitely. Even the way you were describing it then, definitely, I can totally see that. I think especially somebody else has asked about how they can keep this relationship and spark alive, going with 3 kids, you know, they're knackered, full-time jobs, etc. I think the scheduling sex, the way you just described it, is a really, really good answer to that too. You know, make time for it, look forward to it. And I think the building up thing is the thing that then makes it more exciting. And that's what you do when you date, don't you? Like you say, you're about to go on a date on a Friday and, you know, you might send a cheeky pic or, you know, start sending some sexy messages, and then it's like, bam, here we are. So, yeah, I really like that. That's really good advice. Another question we've had is, my husband has a higher sex drive than me. I have a lower one. How do I deal with it?
Okay, so this is something I think comes up for a lot of couples. Actually, studies have shown that up to 1 in 2 relationships will have what is known as a desire discrepancy. And I should say, because I think it's really important to say this, as it's an area that I've researched a lot over the last 18 months, is that, you know, it can be the other way around. I think traditionally people think husband will have higher desire, or you know, male partner will have higher desire. But actually, you know, it's been sort of found in studies, more recent studies, that actually is very little difference between sort of male and female in terms of that desire. So I just like to point that out, because I want to reassure any yes. female listeners that if it's the other way around, they're perfectly normal.
Thank so, you for you saying
know,
that.
It can go either way. And
yeah, I appreciate you saying that actually, because I know if, even in my friendship group, when perhaps, you know, the girl's a bit more sexually driven than the boy, they really get so insecure about it, because it's so traditionally heard that men are, you know, they want to have sex all the time and they're masculine and they want to rip your clothes off, whereas actually a lot of the time for a lot of the women I know, they're actually more sexually driven than the man. So that's a really important point. Sorry to interrupt you. Carry on.
Yeah. And I went slightly off course there because you gave me the example. The question I know that you said was where the male has a greater desire than the female partner. And really, so it makes no difference really as to which partner it is or in the same, you know, within same-sex relationships. The fact is one person has a greater desire than the other. So the key thing is there, we need to kind of understand what's going on. So I would encourage people to talk about it. Certainly when I've done a recent research study, one of the key things that showed to actually help the relationship overall and both, you know, lessen the impact on relationship satisfaction and sexual dissatisfaction was actually, you know, because if you've got the one partner with a higher desire feeling that the other partner, you know, isn't finding them attractive, for example, you know, that can cause quite a lot of sort of discomfort really for both partners in the relationship. So I think first off, it's kind of understanding why, what's creating the difference, and it can be so many different things. It's very rarely actually to do with anything in terms of how attractive you find a partner. It's much more likely to be things like, you know, tiredness, stress, not feeling good in themselves. You know, if you're not feeling sexy and good in your own body, then you're just not going to be feeling, you know, the desire to be sexual. So I think the communication is really key. I would encourage people to kind of certainly maintain or increase general intimacy. So, you know, the hugs, the kisses, keeping that affection going so that both partners can still feel close, and to kind of really negotiate ways that you can kind of move forward with it. It might be, you know, in understanding it, it might be that the, you know, the partner with the greater desire actually sees the sexual intimacy as like an important expression in terms of talking about it, going back to actually discussing it, can enable the couple to kind of find ways that they can, you know, have more sort of tools really to kind of be able to show this. Also, sort of through talking about it, it might not be that somebody's looking for sort of, you know, fully sort of, certainly not necessarily penetrative sex. There might be things that the couple can kind of say, actually, do you know what, you know, I'd feel quite good doing this. Do what you feel comfortable with, get to a place with your partner where, you know, if there is something that you might feel comfortable with, then do that. Otherwise, I'd encourage people to explore the other options, you know, self-pleasure, you know, is it something that the partner with the greater desire can do for themselves? If it's not about that, necessarily about the partnered intimacy, is there something around self-pleasure that they may be able to kind of get that satisfaction from? But I think really what it goes back to, you know, in the first instance, is understanding what it means to each of the partners and understanding why one partner is wanting it and understanding what is affecting it for the partner that doesn't.
I think that's where honesty comes into it, doesn't it? And, you know, it's a massive part in a relationship, honesty. But I think that is where you need to be honest with your partner if you're not feeling it for any reason. And I think I've seen relationships break down because of this in my own sort of circle about, you know, sex drives differing, partners not being honest with each other, and then it just all coming to a head. So with the whole honesty thing, I suppose it's one of the hardest things, isn't it, in a relationship, because people struggle to be honest, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
And why is that? Why do they struggle to be honest, do you think? Do you think it's just a worry about what people are going to think of them, or?
Yeah, I certainly think so. I think, you know, it's certainly quite a thing that people might feel they can be more honest with perhaps a very good friend or, you know, a close family member about their true feelings than they can with their partner at times. And I do think that is something that is quite evident. But, you know, if we can kind of try and work on that and kind of get to a place where you can have quite open and deeper conversations, it really does help the relationship and that bonding between the two people. I think really the reason that it happens is because, you know, if you're invested in your relationship, you're fearful of doing things that might upset the other or cause the other to reject you. You know, so it might be that you're fearful of saying something, you know, if they weren't to like it, what would they do? Would they want to leave their relationship? Would they feel differently towards you? So I think it's often that fear of sort of losing somebody or feeling that you weren't, you know, the person that they seeing them, perhaps being seen as the person that you were in their eyes. So I think there's a lot around that. Yeah. And of course, you know, if you're invested in a relationship and you've got a home together or you've got children or you've got, you know, businesses together, of course, that can become a lot harder as well. And we see it a lot, you know, in terms of sexual intimacy, that you can find the longer, you know, relationship goes on, if people aren't kind of addressing the sexual side, they can end up almost having, you know, this kind of bit of a void really in terms of who they really are as a sexual being and what they're really sexually interested in.
Yeah.
And it's always such a shame because there is this void. So I would always encourage people to kind of, and this can happen at any point in the relationship, that you can actually kind of really go back to the basics of it and say, actually, what turned you on? You know, what would you like? And this is a question really worth asking, you know, frequently, because people's interests change. So I would definitely say, you know, again, going back to this idea of, you know, what we can do if we've been in lockdown and everything's kind of gotten a little bit static, shall we say, then that's something people can be doing, kind of saying, okay, let's, you know, spice things up a little bit. Let's try and understand each other a little bit more sexually again, just as you might have done at the beginning of the relationship, trying to find out what somebody's interests and desires are, because as I say, these may change over the course of a relationship.
If somebody has said, this is a bit of a deep one, thinking of leaving my partner after 15 years, I don't know what to do. When do I know that it's the end?
Okay. That's a really tricky question. That's a really tricky question. Because obviously there's no kind of, you know, clear time, I think. You know, this really does vary from one person to another. I would say, you know, I'm a therapist. Of course, I'm going to say go and explore that in therapy. I just would recommend it, because if you've been invested in a relationship for 15 years, you know, there's a lot of you know, time and experiences that you've gone through together. A lot of things may have happened during that time, both, you know, good and the not so good. And I think it's really important to kind of, at the point that you make that decision to leave a relationship, and of course, I think it's important to add that, you know, sometimes that really is the best thing to leave a relationship. It very much depends on individual circumstances. And I think if you're feeling that way, it's worth really exploring it and understanding why that is. You know, has it been triggered by a particular incident? If it has, you know, have you been able to work through that incident? Or is it an accumulation of things and something that you've been feeling that you've been wanting to do for quite some time? And, you know, think about what it looks like on the other side. You know, what's that going to look like in terms of if you're no longer in the relationship? How will that be if you're single again? And it might be something that you look at and you think, actually, that's really exciting, and that's really where I want to be going with my life. So I think it's important, you know, for people to just think about their own individual circumstances, really work it through on their own, in as unbiased way as possible, as brilliant as family and friends are, and I think they can be really helpful with this. At the same time, people also sometimes project their own stuff, you know, onto you. So it's, you know, if for example you've really worked things through and you're quite unhappy, and you know, perhaps a friend just has an outlook on relationships where, you know, once you're in it, you're in it, you never leave it, then you might struggle, you know, kind of talking to them about it and not getting another opinion, or sort of a place really to kind of explore your own thoughts, which is the most important bit. So I would say there's no particular right time, but I would encourage people to explore it before taking that step, and, you know, talking to the partner, finding out what's going on there.
So we're coming to the end of the podcast now, but a couple of things I just want to ask you. The main question that I had in the inbox, obviously, was how do we spice things up? And I know you touched on them points at the start, but is there anything a bit more kind of quick and achievable that people can do, especially in the bedroom, with kids, things like that, that they can do to spice up their relationship and sex life?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I would say, you know, one of the easiest things to do is just do something different. So whether that is, you know, different positions, different rooms, you know, sex in the shower, sex in the bath, sex in front of a mirror, you know, using toys, sex toys, you know, bringing a blindfold, just try and do something different to the usual routine. You know, it doesn't have to be something massive. It can just be little tweaks. And I think, you know, actually just trying to make the communication between you a little bit more playful, and sort of lighter at times. So particularly this is an important one if you know, if you do have, you do live together and you do have kids and you've got lots of time where you're doing that sort of more of the mundane kind of you know, sort of household stuff, then you want to make sure that you are actually changing the way you communicate so that you are creating a bit of sort of space for you to feel that chemistry with each other. So I think, you know, just making time to make things a little playful, you know, so planning that sort of that date night, even if it's in the house, it can be over kind of like a glass of wine together, play a game, you know, put on some music, dress up, just do something that is a little bit different. And as I said, sexually, I think just doing anything that you can kind of change around it, and asking the other, you know, use messaging apps. That can also be really fun. You know, if you're just perhaps communicating via different means, you know, you could set up a messaging app that you don't currently have on your phone, or set up a different group on it so that you can just use it for flirtatious fun. So just trying to make things a little bit lighter, more playful, flirtatious, and different, really. So any of these things can, I think, can sort of really help.
Yeah, I love them. They're really good tips. Oh, Miranda, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I've had a really interesting chat with you. I really hope everyone's enjoyed this. I've definitely taken a few things from it, and I hope everyone else has too. Thank you so much for coming on. I will put Miranda's Instagram, website, everything down below so that you can contact her if you want to speak to her about anything. And yeah, I really appreciate you coming on. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.